Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Good, The Bad, and The Science. I'm your host, Ethan Edinburgh. This is the show where we break down the science of a movie with a comedian and a scientist. And today is a very special episode because I'm not at home. I don't have to worry about letting my cats into the bathroom so that they can go do their thing. I don't have to worry about Zoom because we're in studio live right now. And I'm very excited to have a guest that is combining both a scientist and a comedian. She's a two-in-one. I'm thrilled to have her here. She's a neuroscientist, to be specific, and the host of the Science of Self-Care podcast. It's Shannon O'Dell, PhD.
Thank you for having me in person.
Absolutely. It's a thrill to be here, to see you. Our engineer, Aaron, is here. Aaron, how's it going?
Hey.
What's up, buddy?
I'm good.
Yeah, I hope that you're good because this whole podcast is basically for you. We're talking about Baby Geniuses today, Academy Award winning film, which actually, now that I'm looking at my research, did not win any Academy Awards, nor was it nominated, weirdly.
Really? I can't believe that.
I know.
With the caliber of film, the acting,
yep,
performances.
I thought Baby Bunting would at least be nominated for supporting actor, but no, he wasn't. But I bring up Aaron because he had a child recently. Congratulations to you. Ruby is 5 months old.
Yes.
And so this is all for you. This is why we're here, Aaron,
yeah,
is to help people in your exact situation.
I appreciate it. I don't know if she is a baby genius, but I like to think so.
Well, hopefully by the end of this podcast, we will find out because here she is, Ruby, ladies and gentlemen. we didn't bring her today. But yeah, before we get into it, you were talking about how you've been beginning sleep training. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nightmare.
I'm sorry to hear that, first of all. I care for you. I want you to get your sleep. I assume that's where it's been tough, is that you've been having limited amounts of sleep. Is that right?
Yeah, only recently. Like, she's been really good. She's mm-hmm. been sleeping 12 hours.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Since about month one, she's either done 8 to 12 hours.
That sounds extraordinary.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah, yeah, that's incredible.
So she is a genius.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, potentially. But she's been doing all of that swaddled, and we are trying to wean her off of that. Because she needs to eventually.
Yeah.
Okay, Shannon, do you have tips? What can he do to get them anti-swaddle?
You know, unfortunately, my time as a neuroscientist, I did not learn anything about baby training. You know, I worked mostly with mice. And with mice, you know, you just kind
tiny
of...
Tiny swaddles.
Yeah, yeah. We make very little tiny swaddles. And you just give them a little kiss on the head, and aww, they normally go straight to sleep.
Wow. How many mice have you kissed, would you say?
I'm going to get my doctorate pulled out from under me.
They find out that's all you were doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Just kissing mice. Okay, so you brought this movie to my attention.
Yes.
I somehow either missed it or blacked it out.
Right,
from
right.
From my mind. And I could speak pretty aggressively on my opinion of this film,
yeah,
but I'm going to let you go first.
Sure. I remember seeing this film as a child. I think we talked about it came out, what, in like 99?
I believe so.
Yeah, so that puts me at 10 years old. Okay, so I don't know. I think this film was probably made for maybe younger than 10 years old, but I saw it then. It's always been in the back of my mind. I think it really made an impression on me. And then recently, I saw some clips, maybe of Robert and Ebert talking about this film and like a couple other films, children's films, and them like arguing about how horrible they were. And I was like, why are they arguing about children's films?
And they both had the same opinion that it was horrible, and yet they're arguing, or one of them liked it?
I don't remember if it was this film. They were talking specifically about Baby's Day Out, and one of them liked it and one of them hated it, you know.
To each his own.
But this, I should have probably looked up. I would assume it didn't get many thumbs up.
Right. Yeah. Have you seen this movie, Aaron?
I have not.
Okay. Probably for the best. Listen, I don't want to offend anybody who made the movie. You know, I don't like to crap on movies on the podcast. I normally have a great time. I'm easy to please. Got to be honest with
you.
However, This movie, I was on board right away. Uh-huh. I loved how it started off with this government, top secret government situation, which is just ripe for parody, which is clearly what they're doing. Yes. And I love that. It was like a fake Mission Impossible or something. So to me, it was like, oh, this is kind of like Zucker Brothers-esque. I'm totally down. And then about 2 minutes in or so, we see the baby who is escaping, Sly or yeah. Sylvester. And just the way that it's shot, I guess, where this little kid is like doing karate mm-hmm. and like throwing grown men who yes. are supposed to be government agents was just very poorly done.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, I will say what I did like about this movie, I think it's a great premise.
Yep. I agree with you there. I love that the government is breeding babies.
Yes.
And to be super smart.
Exactly. And this kind of like sci-fi for kids. I love the idea of like, okay, we're going to do a sci-fi movie for kids. So kids are going to be in the starring role, specifically babies, because I think this movie is for babies. I don't even think it's for kids. I think it's for babies. But yeah, I just think it needs a little bit of improvement, maybe some editing.
Yeah, there was I would say there's two things that bothered me, and yeah. I want your opinion on both.
Sure.
And Aaron, I know you haven't seen it, but feel free to also weigh in, because I do want just an outsider's opinion, because I think that's fun.
Well, it was based on a series of, like, was it DVDs or something, or...
What?
For kids?
Is that true?
Oh, really?
I thought.
What I do know is that it was a whole franchise eventually. Like, this movie was bad, and wow. then they made many more.
I think because the premise was so strong,
yeah.
right? It's a catchy thing. Like you said, it stuck in your head.
Right.
And I think that was the whole point.
Yes.
Was just like, there's no other movies like this where babies are super smart and they can kick ass.
Yeah.
And so that will stick with you, no matter how horribly we make this film.
Exactly.
And again, not trying to offend anybody.
But you know what? It's also in the like realm of time where like Guess Who's Talking was
yes.
maybe coming out, and like also that Baby's Day Out film where it's a film just about a baby like running through New York City.
This was a whole string of films. For some
yeah.
reason, people love weird baby movies.
Exactly, like putting CGI on a baby's face.
That was some of the weirdest stuff that I've seen in a long time, by the way. There's CGI. You can probably just watch clips of this on YouTube, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
But there's like a Saturday Night they reference a ton of films in this movie, by yeah. the way. Like half the dialogue is just he says smoking. You know what I mean? Like there's just so many references to other movies. But yeah, there's like a whole Saturday Night Fever sequence where the baby is dressed up in like a full white suit and is disco dancing, and it's clearly CGI.
Yeah.
And they actually play it multiple times in the movie. This is another issue that I had. They use the same clips in this movie several times, and sometimes the same dialogue. So he escapes at one point in a diaper cart, in a cart
yes.
of dirty diapers,
yes.
where he says the words diaper gravy. Did you notice this?
I didn't notice that exact word, but I remember that scene.
He jumps in there. He smells it. He goes, oh, diaper gravy. And then three more times, people say diaper gravy in this movie. As if that's like a common slang for poop, for baby poop.
Right, right.
So that bugged me a little bit, I gotta say. Yeah, I don't know. I tried to enjoy the movie as much as I could, but there was just certain elements of it that were really strange. The other one I gotta just point out, I want to get both your opinions on, is that... And this was throughout the entire film, is that babies, I think before 2 years old, they referenced, have universal knowledge.
Sure.
That somehow, I think a Tibetan, like an ancient Tibetan book is referenced or something like that. They
right.
just skim over it.
Yeah.
They just say it and then move on.
Yeah.
But supposedly, tiny babies possess not only the ability to speak to each other,
right.
to understand each other in some sort of ancient language that Christopher Lloyd spit out at one point.
Yeah.
But yeah, that there's like a crossover period where they like become 2 years old, and they can feel this coming, by the way, which is really funny.
Yeah.
But then when it happens, they like can start to speak normal human stuff.
Yeah.
Although I gotta say, they broke their own logic and the babies were speaking to the adults before that moment.
It's true.
But okay.
Whoever was kind of like following the logic through this film, there was a lot of holes in the logic.
A lot of holes. A lot of holes. Yeah. Weird holes in this movie. Yeah. Sci-fi writers would be pissed, I think.
Yeah.
But okay. So yeah, what's your take on babies having any sort of universal knowledge, universal truth?
You know, okay, so for all its faults, I think there are a lot of interesting concepts or kind of parallels we can make with actual science in this film. Great. I know this is wild to say, but I really...
That's why we're here.
This is why we're here. And you know, I'm glad I could think about it in this way, because if not, I would think there's no science here. But if I really stretch it, there is. You know, so the idea that part of it was the idea that we hold on to ancient memories, right? The idea was like it was stored in the limbic system is, I think, what Christopher Lloyd said.
Yes, that's correct.
Which, you know, the limbic system is just the areas of the brain that are involved in emotion processing and fear and things like that.
Mm. There's no past life proof.
There's no past life proof, but that said, we know that our bodies and our brains can... We can inherit memories. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's not maybe exactly how you think inherit memories, but we can inherit trauma. Ooh. Which can affect, you know, our development. There's, you know, we have things that are passed down, like our genetics, right? I mean, mm-hmm. We kind of know that your genetic code is kind of, you know, the instruction manual to who you are as a person. But then we have on top of our genetics or on top of our DNA, we have this thing called epigenetics, which literally means on top of DNA. And that's actually a little of what I studied in my dissertation. And it's the idea that the environment can affect your genes. So basically you have your instruction manual, you have your DNA, but your epigenetics or your environment can then kind of write over your genes. So it can kind of highlight different parts of the book, which is your instruction manual. And that can then be passed down.
Okay.
Through generations. So there is, you can collect, your bodies can collect information about the environment, whether that, we a lot of times see it through trauma, like if you experience trauma, and then pass it down to your offspring. And we see that actually happen with multiple generations. So there is, I think, just like a little sliver of scientific,
great,
you know, factuality in this movie.
That's great. I want to zoom into it. So yes. I want to understand this. So epigenetics,
yes,
can be passed down, or is that only after your genetics are passed down? Then yeah, the change or the stimuli that's affecting your genetics is the epigenetics.
Sure, that's a great question. So it's actually a confusing answer. As everything is. You know, originally when the field of epigenetics was first formed, there was this idea that it. For something to be an epigenetic mark, it had to be passed down. Mm. Now, sometimes we talk about epigenetics in a kind of more short-term phrase. So, like, it can just be how your genetic code is expressed. So, kind of like, you know, how the different proteins in different areas of your bodies are being expressed and what that means. So, but also it can mean the passing on. Something to kind of think about, or sometimes how I visualize it. So, say a grandmother who is pregnant with a daughter. Anything that she experiences during the time that she's pregnant is maybe not only affecting her daughter, which is in utero, but also the eggs that are forming, or the reproductive system that is forming inside her daughter.
Whoa.
So sometimes if you think about it, you know, you were inside your grandmother.
Wow. Yeah, you know, thought about that.
Yeah,
really.
Part of your genetic code was inside your grandmother during the time that she was pregnant with your mother.
So what happened to my grandmother while she was pregnant,
yeah,
affects my DNA?
It can. Yeah.
It can. Okay.
And that's just kind of the thought of epigenetics, that, like, you know, since eggs were being developed at that time, you know, and that genetic code was kind of being generated, and half your genetic code is in the egg, that can have an effect. And we're just, even the field itself, we're just learning more and more all the different ways that we can be affected by our environment. I think for a long time, we thought everything was in our genes. Like, whatever you're passed down from your parents, genetically, you know, just mm-hmm. that hardwiring code, that's everything. But we know that that's really only half the story, if not less than half the story. It's really how our genes are being read by our body. So,
So what kind of trauma are we talking about that can affect the epigenetics?
Yeah, I mean, any kind of... So in my research, we always worked in animal models. So it could be, you know, trauma such as just like any kind of stress. So some of the models, animal models would use like maternal separation. So just like the kind of idea, if you separate the mother from the pups for a period of time, that could create stress. And that stress can actually be passed on to the next generation and maybe even the next generation.
Wow. So once again, stress is the killer.
It's a killer, but I mean, we can think about it in different ways. We can think about it in a way of adaptability. So, you know, this is all driven towards survival. So if your grandmother is in a situation that is especially stressful, maybe it passes down a little bit of anxiety or a special alertness because you're kind of signaling it's a stressful environment. So maybe offspring need to be a little bit more alert.
Okay, that sounds positive.
It's positive, but you know, it can be maladaptive in us living in our world. But I just think it's always interesting to think about everything in context about how who we are is affected not only by our present day, but also generations before us.
Yeah. Are there things that we can do to positively affect our genetics?
Sure. I mean, part of that thinking at the same time is that our environment very much changes who we are. So we know our brain is incredibly plastic, right? So it is, you know, adaptable to the environment. So there are ways, you know, to help, you know, change our brain chemistry and, you know, we're not set in stone because we know that, you know, we're so affected by our environment. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, there's positive and negatives to being a human being.
Sure. That's a good conclusion.
That's the overall thesis I've come to.
You got an A for that?
Yeah. That's it. They grade it A to F.
So, I mean, I assume minimizing stress, because stress can also be from a positive thing. If you're too excited too much, that's also bad, right?
Sure.
So maintaining like a zen vibe.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, stress. Yeah, stress can be positive, right? We know that. We know like a little bit of stress helps increase performance, right?
Sure.
But
too much is bad.
But too much is bad.
I've gotten too excitable and spoken too much when I shouldn't have and regretted it immediately.
Sure.
So that's also bad.
Yeah. I mean, any kind of prolonged stress on our bodies and on our brains, it's going to be rough. And people have different, you know, resilience to that stress based on, you know, based on their epigenetics, so based on what's happened to their grandparents or their parents, and you know, based on how they were raised. So I don't know what I'm coming to, but back to Baby Geniuses.
I love it.
What I'm saying is, so this idea of ancient memories, no, we don't have ancient memories, but we do have, you know, we do inherit memories from our past, meaning like in the form of like maybe like stress profiles or something like that. And also we're very much shaped by our own evolution. So, which is kind of a past memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the babies were very impressive to me in this movie.
Yeah.
I was very surprised. And do they, like, can babies communicate better with each other? That was a main question I had while watching.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so like, what's that about? Because it seems like it takes a really long time for us, just comparatively, to understand our infants.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, baby babble, what they, in the movie, they called it, what, baby babble? Is that the way they talked it?
Sure. Don't know.
Baby talks? I think they called it maybe baby talk.
Don't know. I have diaper gravy written four times.
They called it diaper gravy.
I have tuffet written down because at one point she says, what does Miss Muffet sit on? And he goes, a tuffet. She goes, well, what the hell's a tuffet? And there was no answer to that in the movie.
There was no answer. I also actually thought that was a good thing of dialogue. That was a good scene.
That was a good scene. I agree with you.
It was like the only good scene.
We have common ground.
Yeah.
That is a good scene. And by the way, no babies in that scene.
No babies in that scene.
Two adults talking.
Yeah. Kim Cattrall and whoever.
I don't know that guy's name either. And I love that guy.
Yeah. That guy was a dad in like a lot of movies.
Yeah. He was in another movie where he was like freaking out. Oh my God. Hopefully I'll look this up. Hey guys, Ethan here. I couldn't at the time of the recording think of this guy's name, but his name is Peter McNichol or MacNichol. And the movie that I was thinking of is Dracula Dead and Loving It, where he played Renfield. Absolutely hilarious movie from 1995. Leslie Nielsen. If you haven't seen it, please watch it. And I guess this is good a time as any to cut to a commercial break. So we will be right back to the show after this.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
But yeah, baby babble, baby.
Sure.
How babies talk.
Yeah, I mean, something that's interesting that I was reading about because I was interested too, because just like how they were talking about baby talk was interesting to me, is that baby talk does have a purpose. It's not just like, you know, useless babbling. Like, you know, neuroscientists and developmental biologists think, you know, it's really important for forming speech later on that children start to mimic language.
Adults speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why I don't like when adults speak to babies like babies. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, but there's a reason that people talk to their babies in that way.
I like when they just speak to them like people. I like
yes.
When they go, hi, Lewis.
I tend to talk to children that way. Mm-hmm. But there is a...
like a biological, just innate...
Exactly. Talking to babies that way, you talk in a certain enunciation and kind of like a kind of sing-songiness, and it's thought to facilitate language learning in kids.
It's easier for them to pick up.
Right.
Okay.
And it's kind of done in different languages. But another interesting thing about baby talk that I was reading was that actually babies babble in different languages differently.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Which kind of shows that how the baby babbling is really like pre-language, kind of like you trying to learn language and really helps facilitate that language learning, because the fact that babies that are learning different languages babble differently. Like,
right.
That's huge.
Yeah. It seems to have a huge effect how you speak. Like, I guess what I was saying before is I don't like when people do it like that. It's like a super cute puppy and they go to this like high frequency voice.
Right.
That I think bothers me, because I'm like, your kid's going to talk like that and it's going to drive me crazy, you know? Or, I mean, just your attitude in general, like should adjust when you have a child, I think.
Sure.
Like, better yourself as much as possible. I'm not talking to you directly, Aaron. I'm just saying to everybody overall. I was in a boba tea shop the other day and this lady was there with her kid. The kid was maybe 6-7 years old, and I could tell that this lady was a pain in the butt human. You know, she's giving the guy, the cashier, a really hard time. He's being super nice. I'm sorry, ma'am, I'm going to void this transaction. I can get you whatever you need. And she's just going off and off and off. As they're leaving, I hear the kid say to the mom, this is the first time I've heard him speak, and he goes, "This is the worst boba I've ever tasted." And I was like, you see, because you act like that, now your kid
of course
is a pain in the butt. It's so rare to even have a bad boba. They're all so good.
Yeah, I can't I literally can't imagine a bad boba.
I also had a boba from the place, and guess what? It was great. Okay? Boba, I think it's called Boba Time. It's on Verdugo. Shout out. Go get one. It was fantastic. But anyways, so I think it is important to, I see what you're saying, to talk to the baby in like a rhythmic, fun way, and baby talk. But, you know, don't have an attitude. Don't teach your baby to be a prick.
Of course not. But I want to know, Aaron, do you do baby talk to your baby, Ruby?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
It's hard not to. They're so cute.
Yeah. And maybe that's the biological thing. Like when something's super cute, like I talk to my cats like that.
Well,
but I know they're not going to learn to talk.
They're not going to learn to talk, but there is some research actually that shows that baby talk can facilitate kind of attention in at least dogs.
Oh.
That dogs pay attention a little bit more when you use that kind of baby talk.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I guess there
maybe
is a reason.
Maybe it's because when you speak like that, you're showing in a really direct way that you like this thing or that you're excited about something maybe.
Yeah.
And so they're, you know, prone to pay attention.
Right.
Or think like, oh, I'm about to get pet or I'm about to get a treat or
right yeah. Well, there's I think about even now I'm like imagining a baby and talking to it, which but I feel like there's like intense eye contact when you do baby talk.
Yep I agree. Are you intensely looking in Ruby's eyes, Aaron?
I mean I can't get enough of her.
Oh,
I'll show you guys a photo.
Yeah,
that'd be
please.
Good. Could you imagine if that wasn't the case, though? If on this podcast you were just like, honestly, guys, I can't stand my damn child. I don't know if anybody feels that way.
Yeah,
that
no.
would be pretty chaotic. Yeah, I would love to see as many photos as possible. I'm already obsessed with Ruby. I want her as a guest on the show.
Yes.
But yeah, did you worry about that? The baby talk thing? Does that come across your mind?
Not right now, but yeah, I do worry about it.
Mm-hmm. What about music? Are you like sensitive to what music you play your kid? I know that's a big thing.
No, I mean, ironically, we're watching like my wife and I are watching Outlander, and so the baby's there, and that's a super sexy show. And I'm just like, well, whatever. I mean, I saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's gonna be a huge Outlander fan.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Okay, can we talk about baby strength?
Sure.
Or
okay.
Baby,
yeah. Yeah.
Hand-eye coordination, possibly. I don't. Maybe that's a neuroscience link.
There was a lot of baby strength.
Yeah, a whole lot.
Yeah.
In ways that, once again, I think contradicted themselves. There was a part where the baby. Just to give you an idea, guys, if you haven't seen this movie in a long time, or if you haven't seen it at all, there's a part where three of them, in a coordinated attack, grab onto these ropes. They're in this like huge indoor theme park, and they swing like, I don't know, 100 feet up and kick these goons and send them flying backwards. And so can a baby hold themselves up by a rope? I guess that's a good starting place.
You know, babies do have these like innate reflexes. I don't know as much about it, but like I know that like if you like a baby will hang on to something if you kind of put it in front of them.
And, okay. Can they do a pull up?
Can babies do a pull-up? I don't know if babies can do a pull-up.
Aaron?
No.
No. But they do have this reflex where, like, if you put your finger in your baby's hand, like, it grabs.
Oh, right. Does Ruby grab your finger?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. So we do have these kind of reflexes, but, yeah.
How's her diaper gravy smell?
It's not good.
Okay. Sorry about that, Shannon.
How many times daily does she say
diaper gravy? Yeah, does she go, ugh, diaper gravy? And then you know, like, she's got to be cleaned.
But, yeah, what was interesting is they never really explain why baby Sly is so strong. Like, I think they do. Well, they do say, like, he is a genius, right?
Yeah, no, you're right, and I did not think about this. There is no
explanation.
No explanation. Not even in the training grounds, because they built them this little habitat.
Right.
But there's no workout equipment or...
Nothing, and it's like... We don't really, that doesn't get explained. I mean, also the hypnosis doesn't get explained.
Yeah, they have like a, you're right, Jedi power in this movie. It's beyond intelligence. It's, yeah, hypnosis. You're right. Yeah. Not explained. And not utilized enough.
Yeah.
Only like one time they did that.
All of a sudden. Well, I think it was interesting because it like stemmed from the idea that twins could talk to each other.
Right. There was some of that. Yes.
And then it was like.
Like telepathically from great distances.
Right.
Yes.
And then it was like, oh, and also we can mind control.
Yeah. Why not? Throw it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. Maybe some parents would say that their kids can kind of mind control them. Like. Mm-hmm. Aaron, would you think?
Oh, actually, yeah. Aaron, maybe this will spark something. In the movie, the father, the baby is trying to talk to him, and he's talking in this ancient Tibetan baby language or whatever the hell.
Right.
And he actually understands some of that language. He gets like a message. So, have you ever been in conversation with Ruby, and you felt like, oh, I'm getting a sense of something here. I feel like she's trying to tell me something.
No.
Okay. Oh. Very cool.
There are definitely times where she's babbling across the room and I go, oh, I think she said my name, but other than that.
Oh, okay. So that's just like an ego thing.
Yeah, that's just
selfish.
Yeah.
But I do think there is like a part, I do think parents can understand their kids babble probably more than other
Yeah,
like definitely. I think of even my nephew, like when he was beginning to talk, I'd be like, I have no idea what he's saying, but my sister would be like, he wants this. It's like kind of
we're not giving that to him right now.
Right. We're pretending like we don't understand. But that did make me think of you were talking about the environment that they were living in.
Yes.
And this whole idea, I want to go back to the science here.
Great.
Because I think there is some science here. The whole idea is it's set up that they are conducting a twin study.
Right.
Which
a twin study slash those other babies.
Those other babies that are just kind of, but Sly is like the star, right?
Yes.
Because Sly is the twin. And so they put one of the twin who they decided is not a genius. How they're deciding what baby is a genius and what baby is not.
Very interesting.
Not really explained.
No, they claim to have like thousands of babies.
Yeah, they claim
they don't show that.
They don't. And okay. Then they test them right. By, I don't know how, because they keep on showing their brain waves.
Right.
But they don't have any kind of devices on their heads. So I'm like, how are they measuring their neural activity?
I didn't think about that.
I was thinking about how they were collecting data. And then I was like, well, maybe they implanted electrodes or like something. Ooh. Like, because maybe, I don't know, it's sci-fi, who knows?
Sure.
But then when they have the other twin in there, when you know, because there's a big mix-up,
yeah,
he doesn't have
no.
So it wouldn't make sense. So anyway, that's off topic. But anyway, they're doing this twin study, which is something is done in science a lot, right? This
yep.
idea that like if you take identical twins, like can we really see the effect of the environment on you know development or
right.
like who you become? And that is a concept that comes up time and time again in science. Scientists are obsessed with, especially neuroscientists and psychologists, obsessed with twin studies.
Yeah,
there's big
freaks. Sorry.
Yeah. They're so obsessed with twins. I like to say that like we're like an industry that's obsessed with twins, which is like a little bit weird.
Hey, at least you're saying it from inside the industry and I'm yeah. not here insulting you.
There's only a couple industries that obsessed with twins.
That's one of them.
Yeah.
Also, light beers and bubblegum.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
yeah,
true. Exactly. And mattresses. They love twin sized stuff. It's
that,
weird.
Yeah, that commercial is all actually about neuroscientists.
Yep.
And twins. But anyway, so there's actually this thing called, you know, the Minnesota Study of Twins Reared Apart, where scientists looked at, you know, twins that were adopted into different families, identical twins, and saw like how similar were they. And, you know, they did see that some twins that were reared separately did have like a lot of similarities. But the problem with all these studies, of course, is that in neuroscience and psychology, we like to have a large N, it's called, so a large sample size. And with twins, you're getting an N of one. You're getting one mm-hmm. comparison if you're doing one study of twins,
yeah.
which is all they were doing. So bad science on
that.
Them.
And N, I think, just stands for number. You can say that.
What's
just,
that?
It just stands for number.
N. Oh, yeah. N is, yeah, number.
It's the number of
participants. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not that, you know, I know your PhD, but... It's just what it is.
Yeah. Okay. That's true. I've lost sight of what things mean.
Yeah. The other one is the Valium. At one point, they mentioned that they're giving a kid a Valium.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is bad.
I assumed it was bad. And again, it was just skimmed over and thrown in there. And right. I was like, what? I got to write that down.
Right.
So, yeah. What would happen if you give a kid a Valium? Why would you do that?
I don't know why you would do that. I mean, a Valium is just like a benzodiazepine. So it just kind of increases inhibitory activity on the brain. But benzodiazepines are sometimes used in seizures to like reduce or in epilepsy to reduce seizures. It's also used in anxiety disorders, to reduce anxiety, but they're not approved for children, for babies that young.
Yeah.
I do not think so.
Boy, this podcast is just chock full of expert advice, like not giving your babies Valium. For more great tips, tune in after the break. We'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Christopher Lloyd in general seems very evil in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Very skeptic the entire time, also, of just like, I think right at the beginning, one of his first lines is just like, I don't know about this.
Right.
But he's like, he just has an evil face in this movie.
Yes. And what's interesting about his part is that I guess he's supposed to be like the scientist, because there's the
right.
other, there's Kathleen.
Elena, I think
Elena,
is her name.
Elena, yeah, yeah. So she's like the evil.
Yeah.
But he's the scientist. I mean, I guess they're both scientists.
It's hard to say that she's a scientist, but I'm going to go with you on this.
Yeah. She's almost like the like person, the CEO. She's the evil CEO, and he's like the scientist. But, you know, Christopher Lloyd really made a career of being scientists.
Yeah, that's...
on the bleeding edge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, luckily he was in this movie because I can watch him do anything.
Right.
He was awesome. There was a really funny scene to me as a musician where, if you will recall, there is music being played. Sly is banging on a piano and it sounds like Garbage Town. Yeah. It's just a bunch of noise. And... Christopher Lloyd's character is explaining to Elena that, like, actually, this is genius. This is on the level of Mozart. Like, the computer, once we ran it through the computer.
Yeah, the computer.
This music sounds like this. And then he plays it, and it's completely different, and it sounds, like, really nice. And I just thought that was hilarious, because I don't know what kind of computation... is going to convert that
if
banging.
If we take these notes and just change them to different notes.
Change the rhythm of them and change what they are, it becomes really nice. It becomes for Elise. So I thought that was really great and also worth, if you don't want to watch this whole movie, which, hey, I don't blame you. Totally get it. At least go on YouTube and watch this like weird music computation part, because I thought that was really, really funny. Yeah. There was a part where Sly first gets into the city and says, where are the chicks? So I thought that was strange because he's supposed to be like five or something, four. How old?
There's a lot of like questionable language going on between the babies. There's a lot of like...
Insults. They're always like having like sarcastic insults to each
other
too. Yeah.
I guess it's supposed to be the humor, which is kind of like the humor, I think, in Look Who's Talking too. It's like, oh, these babies are rude.
Yeah.
Like, they're also like assholes, which I guess is funny.
Yeah, it can be.
Yeah.
It can be funny. If it had a little bit more logic, I feel like maybe, you know, if it was like an adult soul that was sent into a baby, I'm just throwing things out here.
Or like the, like, we're so mean because we know all the secrets of the universe, right? Because this is a big thing that they're glossing over, is like, these babies know the secrets of the universe, whatever that means.
Yep. But never explained.
Never explained. But they know all, everything that's happened maybe ever is the idea. So like, maybe that's made them hardened people.
I would love that explanation.
Yeah.
If one of them said that. And maybe just even a summation of what the secrets are.
Right.
What it has to do with.
Right.
Because that was such a huge jump. There's another scene. Yeah, Christopher Lloyd and Elena. I don't even know Christopher Lloyd's name in the movie. I'm realizing now. But they are just jumping to conclusions about the babies, like, in real time.
Right.
Which I guess serves like exposition for the movie. But they're just talking to one another. And Christopher Lloyd is like, well, maybe they're speaking their own language. And maybe the language is ancient. And maybe they know everything about everything. And then when they're two, their limbic system shuts down and they can't tell us anymore.
Right.
And she just instantly jumps on board. And she's like, yes, that makes sense. We are going to be so famous.
Yes.
And none of it made sense.
None of it made sense.
So wacko. And also not essential. We didn't need that in the movie. Like, it could have just been the government's breeding babies. To be hyper intelligent and strong, show them working out. I would love that.
I would love a montage of
Yeah, and then just like them escaping, trying to find their real parents or something.
Yeah.
Like, that's enough. Right. I don't need, you know, Tibetan whatever the hell crossing over universal knowledge. Anyway, I know we can't fix this. Right. I know the movie is made and it's out now.
The movie is made, unfortunately. It's not still at the storyboard stage where we can pitch out these ideas to the writers. But I do think it's interesting, the idea of like, that's how a science is. It's like, rather than them like, you know, in real science, what would happen is someone would like propose that and everyone would be like, no. You know, it's so hard to prove anything new in science because... you know, we really have to show evidence for it. But yeah, in this movie, it's just like, here's half of an idea. That's enough. We don't need any evidence. We're just going with this.
Okay, so just about geniuses in general, there's a line where somebody says genius occurs one in every 10,000.
Oh, yes, I remember this.
People. Yeah, so is that true? What is that?
I mean, what is your definition of genius? It seems like I really am not sure what their definition is, because they're judging babies, which I mean, maybe some would say like you could do an IQ test, but you know, IQ tests are really problematic, and what do they actually measure? There are tests you can do in neuroscience, like you can test different executive functions, you can test working memory, or like recall, or attention, and things like that, but you really can't do them on babies, because it requires giving people instruction and then them doing a test. So yeah, I have no idea where their 1 in 10,000 number, maybe like I don't know, I'm just spitballing, maybe like what Mensa says, but
how many Mensas are there, and like I don't know, compared to people,
and I don't know, and what does it mean? I guess Mensa is all based on IQ, right?
Right.
Which we know that's not really a measure of intelligence, so.
Okay, sweet. Well, next time somebody insults my intelligence, I can tell them, like, well, the IQ tests are kind of wonky.
Yeah, exactly. They're problematic. Yep. And there are many ways to measure, you know, intelligence.
How, I mean, at what age can you, like, start to recognize that your baby is smart or is, like, getting it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on what your definition of smart is. It like, you know, is it the idea that you can retain a lot of information based on like, you know, our current schooling systems and like how they present information, then like, okay, that's one measure. I don't know. I just think kind of like intelligent tests are
not making the same stupid mistakes over and over again.
Oh, I have a very, very low intelligence then because.
Okay, that's good to know. So if your baby keeps messing up over and over and over again, no matter how many times you tell them no, they could still get a PhD.
They could still get a PhD. Really, anyone can get a PhD.
They're up for grabs.
They're up for grabs. Mine is being pulled away because I kissed the baby mice too much, but.
Started making out with all these mice, Shannon. You gotta stop doing that.
I know.
Ugh, it's not worth losing your education. Okay, well, I feel like we've squeeze this lemon. Aaron, any other questions about Ruby or about the future of your upbringing or anything like that?
No, I think I saw this movie. As long as I watch this movie, I'll have it covered.
Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah, this movie is really, if nothing else, it's an instruction manual on how to raise kids.
Yeah, and how to make a great film.
Yeah.
I don't want to insult anybody who worked on the movie. I'm sorry I'm saying these things.
Yeah.
It's just an easy target at this point, and all I can think about in my head is the CGI, dancing baby stuff, and I can't get over it. It's hard.
Well, you know, this movie is on a lot of lists of the worst movies.
Oh, great.
The past, you know, 30, 50 years, which I think actually is unfair, because ooh. I've seen a lot of movies that have no premise or like have no point of view, and I think that's worse. This had a style.
Yes.
It was a bad one.
Sure.
It had a premise. There were holes, sure.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's a way to also bring attention to it and, you know, promote it, I guess, in some way. So yeah. I guess, bring, you know, shine some light on it, which is nice.
Yeah.
I've definitely seen worse films than this.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, there is some, like, really decent acting by the adults. And
oh, wow. So the babies, you do not like the babies' performance?
Listen, the babies were very cute. It was just unfortunate what they made them say.
They were literally maybe 3 years old. They were definitely older than the age that they were supposed to be.
Yes, definitely true. but no, listen, it's a, you know, it's a fun film. I'm sorry for saying the things that I've said. I feel bad. It's just like I said, it's an easy target, and there was a few times where I was watching this movie thinking, what the hell am I doing? What is going on right now? It was very strange. But I thank you for watching it, and I thank you for bringing it.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of forced you to watch it because I suggested this film.
You did. Listen, I had a good time. I'm not going to lie to you. I did laugh out loud several times. Probably not the way the movie intended me to laugh, but I did start laughing. And I will be scared of Baby Bunting for years to come. That is a freaky robot baby.
Yeah.
People obviously should listen to The Science of Self-Care wherever they get their podcasts.
Sure.
And
yes, please do.
Where else can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram or on Twitter at Shodell. You can find me on TikTok at Shannon.phd. I'm also a cast member on the podcast Fun City.
Ooh.
Check that out.
That sounds fun.
wherever podcasts are.
Okay. Well, if you're listening to this, you know exactly where they are. I thank you for coming. I'm glad that we could do this in the studio.
This was so fun.
So absolutely fun. Well, thank you, Aaron. And thank you, Shannon, of course. I will see you next time. Bye-bye. Bad Science is a Seeker podcast produced by Emily Feld and me, Ethan Edinburgh. The executive producer is Brett Kushner, and our social media is managed by Blue Whale Media. And please leave us an iTunes review. Give us 5 stars. I sound like an Uber driver, but it does help. It makes sure people know about the podcast, which we really appreciate. Thanks for listening. Bye.